This is Africa, and it's all happening right here. Sanlam is in 33 African countries and counting.
Classic Business, Africa.
It's Monday, and that means time for Made in Africa, brought to you by Sanlam, and to talk about one of the hot sectors in Africa. Now, recently, PepsiCo made headlines for its deal for Pioneer Foods. Some say it was just a beachhead deal to gain a foothold into sub-Saharan Africa. What with our low growth, and why would anyone want to be coming to South Africa now? But last week, chatting to Standard Bank CEO Sim Shabalala, it's clear that he remains bullish on the turbocharged East African growth story, and the one sector that's certainly fizzing to the top is soft drinks. Brendan Grundling is executive for consumer sector at Standard Bank, and he joins us now to talk about a recent report that you've published. Brendan, good evening.
Hi, Michael. Good evening.
Now, you've identified some untapped opportunities in the soft drinks market in Africa through the Soft Drinks in East Africa report. Just firstly, how big is the soft drinks market globally?
Yeah, Michael, it's difficult. I mean, it's a $300 billion in value, that's in dollars. The size of the soft drinks market, it's looking at sort of the individual categories and looking at how those individual categories have started to grow. So particularly in Africa, if you look at Africa, unfortunately, Africa is very small. It makes up maybe about 4% of the total soft drinks global markets in terms of value. But some of the subcategories are really very interesting at the moment across the continent.
And that is quite interesting if you look just at the size of Africa's population. Obviously, a very fast and rapidly growing population. So certainly scope for growth, considering that Africa's population is set to rise by around 25% by 2050. Yet we're very small in global terms when it comes to a share of that global soft drinks and beverage category market. Before we look at the specific categories, what are the sorts of trends that we're seeing influencing the market in Africa? Obviously, globally, there's a move away from sugary drinks and consumers are far more health conscious than they've been in the past. Are we seeing that play out in East Africa as well?
Yeah, Michael, absolutely. I think there's a lot of similar trends we're seeing on the African continent to globally. Obviously, I think the key message is really that some of these trends take a while to sort of influence the African continent or come into the African continent. Three of the key trends that we've seen, really, one is affordability, as you can imagine, is key across the African continent. But how that's playing out is really in the form of pack sizes. So that speaks to the second trend, which is really innovation. So we've seen some very interesting sort of moves into smaller pack size, really targeting new and exciting products around the sort of innovation side of things, but with a focus on affordability. And then the final thing, as you mentioned, there is an element of health consciousness across most of the markets, particularly in East Africa. It's not so much sort of driven by the consumer at the moment, but what we have seen is very interesting is that a lot of the ingredients companies that service, call it the global beverage players, like an Ingredion as an example, they've set up offices across some of the bigger markets in Africa. So what that's meant is that you've had smaller beverage players that have now got direct access to be able to reformulate products and to remove the sugar or scale down on the sugar in the products and been quicker to innovate into these markets. So those, I'd say, are the three key trends at the moment.
I want to pick up on the innovation trend because we're seeing it in South Africa play out. Heritage brands, and whenever I look at some of the big FMCG companies and I see how they're hemorrhaging on some of their heritage brands. Consumers, specifically through a downturn, try different products. So they trade down sometimes into tier two, tier three categories. And they realize, well, the drop in quality isn't necessarily justified by the increased price premium that I'm paying for a tier one brand. So it seems to indicate that there's a lot of space for new competitors to come in and enter a market, even if it looks like it may be quite saturated by the big players, the Coca-Colas and the PepsiCos.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, unfortunately, for some of the big multinationals and also our big sort of local food players or beverage players, I think there's recognition that a lot of them have almost become lazy, to be honest. And we've noticed, as you've said, sort of, smaller players, sometimes, you know, particularly in South Africa, some of the players in the private label space or dealer-owned brand space being far more nimble, innovative. and coming to market with key products, whether it's in the beverage or food space, that really consumers are looking for, whether that speaks to healthier products or smaller size packaging, more sort of innovative packaging. Absolutely a big trend at the moment.
And within that then, categories, what are the popular categories? I think water, and I would assume water is a very popular one, just because the access to good quality drinking water is really limited outside of South Africa and the rest of Africa. What are we seeing from a category perspective?
Yes, it's interesting if you divide the continent up. It's quite interesting. In West Africa, obviously water makes up a large contribution to the mix. Exactly, as you mentioned, really just difficulty in pure good quality drinking water. But as you move eastwards, so sort of looking at East Africa, which is what the report's really focused on, the mix is actually very similar to global mix rates. In other words, the contribution is very similar to global trends. So what we see there is you have water, which is a big, obviously, contribution or component. You have juices or fruit juice blends. And then you have the carbonates and non-carbonates. And then obviously, I think what's also been very prevalent in South Africa is this growth rate in the energy space. And that then goes into a whole new subcategory, which if you're in the global market, energy is subdivided into high energy or sports energy, if you want to call it that. Those are two separate categories. In Africa, we still see it as one category and a lot of growth coming through from that category, whether it's the likes of sort of high energy drinks that we've become aware of, we've seen a lot of in South Africa in the form of a Red Bull or a Monster, and then trending into sort of what we see as real smaller brands that have actually taken substantial market share from these big players, and that's really been driven by two things. One is these energy drinks are often manufactured by local sort of family-operated businesses up in East Africa and have the distribution into the market. And then second of all, as I said, the big trend across Africa is affordability. We've seen smaller players really coming through with an affordable product and then getting the distribution into the continent.
Distribution is interesting in Africa, isn't it, Brendan? If you look at how tough it can be sometimes to enter into a market that is a lot less formal, so to speak, you get break bulk distribution. What does the value chain look like and where do you see most scope for participation? Is it in bottling or distribution? Just break that down for us.
Yes, I mean, it is interesting. I mean, when you look at sort of the big players that we've, we've come to recognize as the market leaders, whether it's PepsiCo or Coca-Cola, most of them sort of have a bottling agreement with the bottler in certain regions. And over years, they really have worked hard and established, a route to market through their bottler arrangements. Where we've seen things change recently, as I mentioned, is that there's been a lot of growth in these sort of family-owned businesses across Africa. And businesses were traditionally conglomerate businesses. So they established themselves as sort of a mix of businesses in Africa, whether it's a sort of industrial type of products, into food or FMCG, and then into beverage. And as a result of that, the network that these family-owned businesses have in terms of getting product to the end consumer is very important and then well established. And that's really where we've seen some significant growth and opportunity. That's really changed the game in the sense that it's allowed smaller players to, as I said, be innovative, be nimble in getting products into a certain region. But also important is for them to understand what works not for the consumer, but also works for the actual what we call sort of trader or middle market person, who essentially is the person selling the product. And that's often where some of the innovation rate really pays off.
And I was looking through the report in Uganda and Tanzania, for example. There is quite an interesting model where you've got a stockist. It's an additional leg to the distribution fulfillment. And unlike distributors, they aren't loyal and they will stock competing products and other categories. So there are also risks as well that one needs to be aware of.
No, absolutely. And I think that's, I think we go into that in quite a bit of detail in the report that, unfortunately, a lot of these markets require sort of patient capital behind it and needs players or needs investments over a longer period of time to develop sort of those type of opportunities, where the challenge is actually, yes, that, some of your stockists or redistributors, sometimes as we call it, are not loyal, and you need to build a product brand awareness, build sort of an innovation pipeline that It allows for you to have the right product for the consumer, but also for the redistributor. It needs to work for the distribution process as well. You can't just have a product, and we've seen this before, where you have maybe a South African company that says, look, I've got a great product, I can introduce this into West Africa. It works for the consumer, but they forget that there's almost 7 different touch points from factory to consumer. And if you don't have the right price point there, you don't have the right sort of pack size, you can't get the product into the market.
You mentioned patient capital. We've seen a lot of private equity money flowing into the beverage category here in South Africa. Bevco, Ethos spring to mind. Do you see potential private equity deal activity going into some of those family-owned businesses and offering that relationship-based patient capital type partnership?
I do. I think that's a great opportunity. I think, two key things are obviously one is around patient capital. So it's capital over a long period of time. And that's something that we've been working on with our clients, is trying to understand sort of what is the required return over what period in Africa. I think there's been a lot of people that have burnt their fingers, trying to go into certain markets, trying to extract a quick return. I think that hasn't worked. But there's a lot of opportunity to look at this sector in a different view. And then the second important thing I think for private equity to think about is really around what they bring to the party, what can they offer. And from that point of view, we've seen, as you mentioned, Bevco being very successful at innovation, understanding what global trends are, how that relates to Africa. So I think, there is scope for that.
And then in terms of consolidation, do you see any of that playing out?
Consolidation, I think we're way off consolidation at the moment. I think we're sort of in that phase where we're seeing, sort of new startups coming through into the markets. On average, you might see 10 startups, maybe 2 or 3 will actually be successful over the next 5 or 10 years. So I think we're not at the consolidation phase yet. What you may end up seeing is partnerships. So what we have seen in other parts of Africa where, as an example, a certain sort of category or brand product has better distribution than a stronger brand, as an example, and those two pair up or partner, I think we may see that going forward, and we might also see some partnerships with some of the bigger players. But consolidation, as I mentioned, sort of, I think we're some way away from that.
I'd ask the question just from the view of a private equity investor, perhaps going in thinking of the exit in mind. As you know, that's one way you can spot a private equiteer is the first one looking for the exits when they enter the room. What do you see this market looking like in the next 7 to 10 years?
Yeah, look, we're quite excited. I think, I think the difficulty is, as you understand, everyone looks at growth rates. So the big multinationals, as you mentioned, the various deals that have sort of started to come through, growth is key. So, looking at GDP growth rates across the continent, we need to see the continent growing sort of, close to double digits or at least 6% in some of these markets. So hopefully we get to a period in time, particularly in East Africa, where there's consistent growth and in the actual soft drinks category, we've seen double digits compound annual growth rate over the last 10 years, so that's good. If we can continue with that and we get patient capital behind that growth, I think we can see sort of strong competitors to the traditional big branded players, which then means there's further investment and hopefully sort of cross investment into other categories like consumer packaged goods, which you mentioned early on with PepsiCo. If you look at PepsiCo globally, 54% of their business is actually food. It's not beverages. And I think Africa really is a basket player. I think if you have private equity players coming in looking at a total beverage offering, in other words, going across the various beverage categories and maybe bolting on food opportunities, I think that's really where the continent can benefit.
Brendan Grundling, Executive Consumer Sector at Standard Bank, uncorking quite a pleasing prospect for beverage players in East Africa. Let's cross to Katleho, is standing by with today's news wrap.
Sanlam, rooted in Africa. Proud sponsor of Made in Africa. Sanlam is a licensed FSP. Wherever you are right now, take a listen around you. You'll hear something unique that you can't find anywhere else in the world. The people, the nature, the rhythm of the street. You can make something here, create something here, be the first to imagine something here. Take a listen around you. This is Africa, and it's all happening right here. There's a group of wealth smiths that have invested in Africa's potential for over 100 years, in 33 countries and counting. Sunlum, for generations to come. Sunlum is a registered FSP.